Religion of Speed podcast. What's up, everybody? We are back. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Matt. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to be back again. Again.
Yeah.
the only consistency we have is inconsistency.
Oh, but we always come back.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. We always come back. We're like a, I was going to say frisbee. What's the
Australian? Boomerang?
Boomerang. Thank you.
An unpredictable boomerang.
Yes. We'll come back just when you're not paying attention. Right. Slapping in the back of the head. Oh, man.
That should be our slogan.
So, yeah, we are back. It has been a minute since we recorded, but we are in the new studio. You may hear some echoing.
It's nice, though. We have our own dedicated room. This is I'm looking forward to seeing this develop and, you know, become a professional studio. This is going to be cool.
Right? Yeah, it is, you know. I mean, people listening wouldn't know, but before we were just recording in the dining room of my apartment. So now I have my own condo, and one of the rooms is now my office, and it's a recording studio. So, although, as it is with no sound deadening, it's more just an echo chamber than a sound studio. But hey, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah, one step at a time. When you hear less echo, you know we've made progress.
Right? Oh, I'll probably be bragging about that. They'll be like, oh man, look, listen, it sounds so much better.
We'll post pictures on the Instagram.
Yeah, there you go. Oh man. But a lot has happened in the last few weeks. I mean, me personally, I've just been busy doing this condo stuff. Oh my God. Buying a house. I never knew it would be so much work.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen you as stressed. You usually look pretty zen when you're working on cars.
But, yeah. Yeah, no, it's just like, there's just so much stuff to do and so much stuff to keep track of and so much of my money leaving.
And didn't you say it was about a ream of paperwork you had to get through?
Oh my God, I don't know where it's at right now, but yeah, it was probably like an inch and a half stack.
That's intimidating.
Right? Well, the thing is, too, like you can't, we'll get to cars in a second. Sorry. You can't actually sit there and read everything as you're going through it. You'd be there for 5 hours.
Yeah.
So you're just like signing things like, sure. I don't, yeah. My life, yes. My firstborn, yeah. Yes. Like, whatever. My car, sure. I have that, too.
It's a legal document. It's got to have some level of reasonability to it, right?
Yeah, of course. So the only thing that sucks about buying a condo is I won't have the most money for project cars for a little bit. But anybody that follows the Religion of Speed Instagram, which is religionofspeed.co on Instagram, will see I've been posting a few pictures, and you will have seen on there Iggy just hanging out with the rabbits in the parking lot.
The rabbits do love him.
I don't, yeah, what is up with that?
Yeah, every time I pull in, there's another set of rabbits just hanging out under Iggy.
And somehow they haven't ate all the wiring?
I hope not.
I mean, I just pulled it in yesterday.
Okay, that's good.
In the shop, and it started.
Yeah.
Although, the alternator's not working on that thing anymore.
Oh, that's not good.
So, maybe they did get to the wiring.
After that Impreza that came in, it's it makes me really fearful about having stuff parked.
Right.
Yeah, that's... I had to do the entire wiring harness and order those new anti-rattle foam pads from Japan.
Yeah. I love how that's the hardest part to get, is these little foam pads.
Yeah, I already have the fuel pipe at the shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so once again, if you follow the Instagram, you would have seen the Subaru just with chewed up wiring. But the crazy part is if you look at those pictures on there, there's like these little foam pads underneath the intake manifold. And all those do is insulate the fuel lines, high-pressure fuel lines, because it's a direct injection vehicle. And they don't insulate it from heat or anything. They actually insulate the noise coming out of them. Like, I don't know if in the shop, Chris, you've ever heard when we have one of those newer BMWs running without the engine cover on it.
Yeah, there's a ticking noise. It almost sounds like it's got a lifter, like a valve issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a lifter tick, but that's just how they sound.
Wow.
So that is part of the reason why all these cars these days come with these big engine covers and foam everywhere.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't, people would be complaining every time they go through a drive-thru and be like, well, my car's making a ticking noise, you know?
That Lexus was pretty ridiculous.
That was, yeah. Lexus has a whole nother level. Yeah. They're like, we don't want people to know they're driving a vehicle.
Yeah. Is it electric? Is it gas? Is it diesel? You don't know.
Does it have an engine?
Right. All you know is that it moves.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's one tragic thing about the Boxer engine, and I love them, but if they ever sit, You know, in addition to the head gaskets getting deteriorated, I feel like that spot in the crankcase, because the engine's horizontally opposed, is just the perfect spot for a mouse or squirrel to make a nest.
Yeah.
It's like they designed it that way almost.
Well, it's like the old ones between like the alternator and everything else that's like packed in there. There's not a whole lot of room for animals to get in, especially like on a turbo one. You can't get in there.
Yeah.
But these new direct injection ones, they don't have power steering pumps because it's electric steering.
Right.
So there's just a little idler pulley. And then it's just, yeah, this nice little warm basket where mice like to make nests.
And you could tell that's exactly where he'd spent all of his time.
Yeah.
There was all that nesting, all the ripped up, I should say, you know, ripped up insulation and wiring, right. You know, tucked in right there.
There were some twigs and stuff in there too. He brought some construction materials with him.
Well, that's good. That's good. He didn't entirely rely on what was there.
Right.
My WRX lost an electric radiator fan to a squirrel.
Oh, really?
Because, yeah, I had an issue where it ended up sitting for a couple of months, and by the time I started it back up, I had no fan.
Man, so I'm just wondering, the Miata that's back at your parents' place, I wonder if that's been...
I don't even want to think about it. It's between the holes in the top and how much moisture Tennessee got last year. My dad said the wheelbarrow in the backyard just filled completely up with rainwater.
Oh, man.
And that was just in a matter of a couple of months.
The Miata may have filled up with rainwater.
I believe so. It may end up being a death cart.
Yeah, this rescue mission might turn into a little more in-depth than we thought.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, but it'll still be cool to get it back. You know?
Right.
It's a Miata, so if we sort the wiring issues, I'm sure we can get it running again.
Yeah, probably. I mean, there isn't that much to it. That's what I was going to say. I told you about the time my Miata got ants, right?
No, it got ants?
Ants.
This is the NB, right?
Oh, I had an NA.
Okay, yep. Okay.
It was a 91, so it was okay. Had the 1.6 liter in it.
Right.
It sat all winter, and then I got it back out in the spring, and I'm driving, and there's just ants crawling everywhere. And I peel back the carpet, and somehow they had made like an ant colony, like in like where the rear firewall is, where the seat back goes, you know?
Yeah.
Like in that little corner, there was a bunch of dirt. Don't know why the dirt was there. And if they brought it in, I don't know. But yeah, there were just a ton of ants everywhere.
You know, I feel like that's the biggest problem area with any two-seater convertible, that rear firewall area behind the seats. And it's that bottom area that you never get to see.
Yeah.
And if you neglect it, that's where the trash, that's where the moisture, that's where the mold always ends up.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I've already, you know, before I moved out here, I would, every time the Miata had been sitting, I would have to use that, you know, white vinegar water solution and just get all the mildew out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Which that works out really well. 20% vinegar, 80% water. It doesn't mess with the upholstery, but it does kill the mold.
Okay. Well, that's a good tip for anybody that's not listening in Colorado, because we don't have that issue out here.
Right. Air is so dry out here.
Yeah. The only issue we have out here is, you know, fires in the middle of February.
Man, last year's fires were just next level.
Last week's fired right down the road from me.
Really?
Did you not see that one?
No, I didn't see that one.
The whole, if you go down 285 here, like 285 and 470, there's a big golf course, open field area.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that whole thing caught on fire last weekend.
Wow.
It was like a 100-acre fire.
And that's in February.
Yeah, that's in February.
It was really cold last week.
It's just like, we're supposed to have snow on the ground, but we have fires. Like, great. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to this. This summer is going to be a little rough, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because last year we at least had a moist winter.
Right.
But it's been a pretty dry winter this year.
Yeah, because the snowfall or snowpack in the mountains is like 70% of what it normally is right now.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're still down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to get rough, but, you know.
Well, that's part of it, though. It's what price we pay. When there's no smoke, when there's no fire,
right,
and in the springtime, the air quality here is just fantastic.
Right.
You know, that's back east, you could smell the mildew under the leaves.
Yeah. Yep. But springtime here, driving in the mountains,
it's pretty amazing.
It's a good time.
That's when I miss my Miata the most.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. Ever since I've moved here, yeah. I was like, why did I get rid of my damn Miata?
Yeah. Yeah, there's just certain times a year here where it's like, this is perfect convertible weather.
Right.
Which is not like you get a whole lot of convertible days here, but...
I don't know. Honestly, even this winter, there's been plenty of days I've been driving my windows down, so yeah. I'd put a Carhartt on, heat on, top down, that's fine.
Yeah, just roll up the windows so you don't get buffeted too much.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, I used to do that in Michigan, too, though. Yeah. Like, middle of winter, I'd be like, I'm going to take the Miata out. Top down, I don't give a shit.
Convertible enthusiast. I mean, I swear, owning a convertible on a good day, even a not-so-good day,
right.
It improves your quality of life.
Yeah.
You know, just cruising around with the wind in your hair like that, you know, and you're kind of, you get to, you're kind of involved in everybody you drive past, too.
Right.
You know, it's a cool way to drive around. Without the, you know, worrying about laying down a motorcycle.
Right, yeah, because, you know, my girlfriend Kayla's kind of said it before. She's like, well, why don't you just get a motorcycle? I'm like, well, you're, like, if you're smart anyways, you're in a helmet.
Right.
You're in a jacket. Yeah. You know, yeah, in a convertible, you're in a t-shirt, open top. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, it is more open for some whatever reason. Oh, God. Oh, God. Bless you.
We're good.
But, yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, Miatas have gone up in price like crazy, so...
You know, it's kind of wild. After 30 years, the NA Miata is finally starting to get rare.
It's not really rare, though. There's still hundreds of thousands of them out there.
But everybody wants to charge more for them now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's looking at, like, the used car market in general, like, prices of everything are up.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Everybody thought they could get a good deal during COVID.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
But then, and then everybody took advantage of it, and then it just drove up the prices.
Yeah.
Because everybody was at home wanting to work on the cars. But it's like, you're not working. How can you afford the parts to work on the car?
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people, like, ran into that at some point. They're like, yeah, we're going to work on the car. Like, ah, shit, I need parts. Ah, shit, I don't have money. Ah, shit, I got to get rid of the project car.
Maybe we'll see another drop in price when everybody... realizes that they need to get rid of their COVID purchases.
Right.
Yeah.
I still think there's a business there to buy up people's unfinished project cars and finish them. Because the one I always think about is I knew this guy in college who was building a Z31 300CX
okay.
with an RB25 in it.
Nice.
So he had the RB25, he had the correct mounts and subframe, because I guess they actually Nissan made an RBZ in Japan.
Wow. I didn't all the way up to the Z31.
Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
I think it was like a special edition thing. I don't know. This guy knew the part number of the subframe to get so that way the RB would work.
Yeah, having an OEM mount for an engine swap is something that is a luxury most people don't have.
Right. But yeah, he had like nice intake manifold, big old aftermarket turbo, just a whole bunch of parts.
Yeah.
And then he had to sell it because what he was doing was he was using his student loan money to pay for the project car,
ooh.
Which wasn't a great idea.
Yeah, those are some interest rates that are going to get back to him.
Right? So he had to sell the car, but he sold it for like, I think he wanted like $3,000 for everything.
And it had the RB25 in it.
I don't know if it was in it yet, but it had the RB25. It had the mounts.
Wow.
Like, I didn't have a place at the time. I didn't have a place to put it or do that or anything like that. Because I was like, fuck, like, that would have been amazing. I mean, that's the thing is a lot of times when people sell their project cars, they get bottom dollar for it.
Yeah, they have to take a hit because, well, I mean, when you're buying that, you don't know what you're buying into either.
Right.
So, you know, you're buying a car that's, you know, it could end up needing a lot more. Like somebody could have gutted it to try to make a race car and then walked away. But sometimes you've got those gems, you know. I mean, an RB25 and a Z31 rolling chassis for $3,000,
right? I can figure out the rest from there.
It costs more than that just to buy an RB25 set up from a Canadian importer.
Right. I think this was back in college. Things were a little bit cheaper back then, but still.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, that's a good deal. And like, but I do know people who have bought other people's project cars that are just complete basket cases that never ran, and they sold it then, you know?
Yeah.
I knew a guy, he I can't remember what car this was on, honestly, but it was running a Mega Squirt.
Okay.
That somebody else had built.
Ooh, so it wasn't wired correctly.
It was not. I don't know what they did to it, but man, it was just that car never worked.
You know, that's actually how I got my parts car.
Okay.
For my S14 is somebody was trying to do an RB25 S14 and then decided they couldn't afford the RB25 setup. So they started to put a KA back into it and didn't finish.
Oh.
And so it's, you know, it's a rolling shell with an unfinished KA installation,
oh.
Which is, you know, exactly what I need. I've right. already started cannibalizing it to keep mine running.
Yeah. that works. God, that would suck to be like, I'm putting an RB in this and get halfway done and be like, oh, I got to put another stock engine back in it.
Yeah. And then not even finish that. Yeah, that would be a real hit.
You know, a lot of people take on project cars and don't really know what they're getting themselves into, unfortunately.
Yeah, but that's how you kind of get into the hobby, you know?
Yeah.
It's an expensive lesson, but hopefully it's one you carry forward, and hopefully it doesn't get you out of cars entirely,
because yeah.
there is the right project for you. It's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just maybe a smaller project.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe get a car that's running and do something lighter to it
mm-hmm.
and use that to learn.
Right.
You know, I'm by no means a professional, but I've made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, I am a professional, and I've made a lot of mistakes. I had a kind of like a Hall of Fame parts thing for a while there of mistakes that I've made that I've just carried with me through my career.
But the cool thing is, you know, you learn from those.
Right.
You know, and they make you a better gearhead, a better mechanic. You know, and when you're on Craigslist and you recognize that in somebody else, you're like, okay, I'm not going to buy that.
Right. Oh, there's been so many times. I need to stop browsing Craigslist, honestly.
It's addictive. And if you don't have the money, it's a little depressing.
Right. Well, that's why I started the Just Browsing series on YouTube.
So you could have an excuse.
Yeah, I have an excuse to be browsing all this stuff. I need to get back and do that again. My computer is still sitting right over there. The desktop, anyways, just like chilling. Haven't hooked it up yet. Like, so much stuff to do.
But you are a homeowner.
I am. It's crazy.
That is cool. You're a millennial and a homeowner.
Yeah. Like I was telling Chris Heil, another guy at the shop we work at. Actually, yeah, the listeners of the show know Chris Heil. He's been on the show. Like I was telling him, I want to make business cards. This is Matt Overstreet, homeowner.
Yeah.
People be like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you put millennial homeowner, they'd be like, wow, this guy's got ambition.
Right?
Yeah.
This guy must be rich.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Maybe someday, though.
Maybe.
They say owning your own home is the best way to start building wealth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the goal. I mean, this place, you know, it's a condo. It doesn't have a garage. So it's not very gearhead friendly. But the goal is to eventually gain equity and move up to a place that does have a nice garage and I can work out of by myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I rent a garage right now and, you know, it's not mine, but it's the closest thing I've ever had to it.
Yeah.
And it's my car's up on jack stands in there right now.
Yeah.
And just knowing that I'm, you know, I'm not in the back of my mind worrying about, oh, I have a half taken apart car parked on the street or something
right.
that doesn't run. You know, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
And not to mention, you know, I can wander down there even though there's a blizzard going on in the Denver area right now. And I can close the door and plug in my space heater and
right.
do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, barriers to entry as far as, like, our generation getting into the car hobby.
Yeah.
You know, the one of the big ones is, yeah, just having a space to work on your freaking car.
Yeah.
You know, people that live out in the country, it's not as big of a deal, but you know what percentage of our population lives in cities in America?
Right. I mean, if you don't have a way to kind of work on your own, if you're not like an artisan or, you know, have a way to make money independently while you're out in the country, you know, the economy favors the cities.
Right.
You know, you can get a better job moving to the cities.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm still in Denver. It's like, yes, I could move back to Michigan, into rural Michigan where my parents yeah. are, and work on cars, but I'd probably get like $15 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, as a fully master certified tech. It's
yeah.
just like, yeah, I can't afford to do that. So, but the problem being in the city is finding places to work on cars.
Yeah. It's you know, it's like, okay, now you have the job, you have the money for the project cars.
Right.
But you don't have the space.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, I'm back east, back in Tennessee, even in the cities where I'm from, I'd be lucky to make $10 an hour.
Yeah.
So it's the opportunities are here for sure. But, yeah. You know, it gets a little frustrating when you're trying to find some space that's your own.
Just finding space in general.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, one of my dreams in the future, we're going on a tangent here away from cars, but is I do want to build a cabin in the woods. Like, I do want that, like, retreat of just, like, I need to get out of here. Or if shit goes bad, bug out bag, out to the freaking woods.
Yes.
I'm embracing my inner Joe Rogan right
now.
But just trying to find, like, a piece of land that isn't owned, like, doesn't have an HOA on it.
Even
if it's in the middle of freaking nowhere.
Yeah.
These people buy up all this land and then divvy out the plots and make you pay HOAs.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can have your 10 acres, but oh, there's HOAs and there's rules.
Right. If you want to build a shed, you need approval.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, no, when I was growing up, if you lived out in the country, you did whatever the fuck you wanted.
Exactly.
And nobody questioned it.
You know, and I was looking at buying land, you know, in rural Colorado because, you know, down south of Pueblo, it's gorgeous. And, you know, once you get that far south, there really isn't a whole lot. There's just little towns.
Yeah.
So you really are out in kind of some unspoiled areas. And I found places, you know, where there is nothing. But there's not even plumbing run to this. And they're already divvying it up into sub 1 acre plots for subdivisions.
Yeah.
That is crazy to me.
It's so crazy. I think I'm going north, though. If I buy land, I'm going north.
Get away from the global warming.
Exactly. Like, Montana-Canada border. In 100 years, that'll still be habitable.
There we go.
You know?
Yeah, and your kids will have somewhere to live.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta think of the future here.
There we go.
Because apparently we're just not gonna do anything about climate change.
Nope.
No.
No.
We're just gonna roll with it, I guess.
So there's more electric cars coming, but... not fast enough.
That there are. I mean, let's get back into cars here. Let me do a quick Google. Was it Ford that was going to be releasing like 20 new models of electric car?
I think GM said that by 2030 they wanted to try to have an all electric lineup.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about Ford, but I know that you said they've already got the Mustang e-tron.
Yep. Mach-E.
E-tron's yeah. Audi.
I don't remember what it was. Ford is all in on California 2035 EV mandate. Yeah, I thought it was even faster than that. Ford was like, yeah, we're going to have like 20 new electric models in like the next 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And right now, there's such a small amount of the market segment. And, you know, as someone who loves internal combustion, I want more people to buy electric cars so that I can burn the gas they would have burned.
Right, exactly. You know, Jay Leno said it a long time ago, like back, this is like, I think he said like 10, 12 years ago. He's like, electric cars are going to save the internal combustion engine because, you know, we're going to run out of fuel eventually.
Right.
You know, we're going to... we're just going to ruin the... Well, I don't know if he was even concerned about the environment. At the time, it was... All the talk was about peak oil.
Right.
You know, that we're just going to start running out of oil eventually.
Yeah.
And then fracking came along. And we're like, oh, no, we got plenty of oil for the rest of our lives.
So
it's fine.
So what if it causes earthquakes?
Yeah, earthquakes and shitty water and...
Yeah.
You know, more greenhouse emissions. I swear we're an automotive podcast. We're not a... we're not a tree hugger podcast. But there's something about being in Colorado that you're like... You know, I kind of want to keep nature around.
You know, that was one thing I didn't expect when I moved here. Because, you know, there's a lot of coal rolling diesel guys back where I'm from.
Yeah. Go up to Greeley.
Yeah. A lot up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I pass a lot when I used to work in Parker. I used to keep my windows up and my AC on recirc because there was always at least one black coal rolling diesel.
Yeah.
But, you know, it didn't seem to bother me as much back there because the air was already so polluted. You know, once the air gets about 2 feet up out of the exhaust, you don't see it anymore.
Yeah.
But here in Colorado, I feel like you can watch it drift all the way up to the sky.
Yeah. You just watch this cloud. Like,
yeah.
There it goes.
And the whole time you're watching it, you're just blaming that diesel owner.
Yeah.
You're like, that's from you. You did that.
And he's all proud. Yeah, I did do that.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I set up my car to roll coal. It makes less power, and it's worse for reliability, but I get to blow black smoke on Priuses and liberals.
Right. Yeah. Talk to Gail Banks about rolling coal. That man knows the most about diesels I think anybody knows. Like, you watched his video on the rear diffs, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But that man has been tuning diesels since before tuning diesels was cool.
Wow.
And, like, if you told him about rolling coal, he just gets livid. His videos on his YouTube channel just being like, you guys are idiots. You're losing power.
Like, you make less power just so you can blow black smoke out of your semi-truck exhaust stacks that you put on your bed.
Right. So, I mean, yes, diesels are going to... Like, if you have a performance diesel, it's going to smoke a little bit.
Yeah.
But not like that.
But making it smoke on purpose is another matter entirely. Yeah.
I will say, I haven't seen... Like, I know Colorado really cracked down on that. At least Denver did.
Yeah, anywhere where there's an emissions restriction. But yeah. If you get out into Douglas County, you still see it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I don't see it as much as I used to when I first moved here.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I feel like people... Maybe the trend's just dying off.
I hope so. It's like one of those weird trends where you're just like, I can't wait for this to go out of fashion.
Right.
I would say about stancing, but I know that we disagree on that one.
We highly disagree on that. Listen, at least when you stance a car, you're not ruining the environment.
That's true. You're not. You're just ruining your car.
Fair enough. But yeah, so, you know, electric the way of the future, so that way we can keep burning gas. Although... Back to that for a second.
Yeah.
I am kind of worried that there's going to be a point in the future where we're going to have just like, we're going to have to convert all our cars to ethanol, and we're going to have to make our own ethanol in our garages.
Yeah, and that's another reason where it would be great if electric cars, you know, were available sooner so that the gas didn't run out as quickly. But
well, I'm not really concerned about running out, because I think if everybody picks up electric,
right,
we're going to have oil forever. But the demand... It's going to slump so much.
It's going to kill the actual the supply side of that market,
right?
Because of that, as a
consequence. It won't even be profitable to bring it out of the ground at that point.
That will be interesting. We might have to convert everything to ethanol,
right?
And have moonshine stills in our backyard,
right?
It's like, oh, you're making moonshine. Nope, this is for my car.
Well, yes, but also for the car. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see more. No. Ethanol products in the future.
That would be interesting, and it'd be cool to see, you know, kits where we can convert older vehicles to ethanol,
mm-hmm.
you know, without them seeing a lot of the detrimental effects.
Right.
You know, like newer vehicles obviously can handle more ethanol mixed into gasoline, but, you know, our old 90s stuff is a little more susceptible to that damage.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of direct injection high pressure fuel pumps
are
not meant for it either.
Yeah, my BRZ squeaks like a cricket.
Oh, really?
And apparently that's a thing on the 86 chassis, is the that fuel pump under the hood will squeak and makes little chirping noises.
And that's just normal?
And it's a result of the ethanol mixed into the gasoline. When I ran 44K and I EPR'd my engine, it went away for a little while.
Huh. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you might need a high-pressure fuel pump soon.
Yeah, it might go out.
Yeah.
Apparently it's a thing in all the 86 chassis. So as they age, it just starts to chirp, and mine's only a few years old, so it's already starting to do it.
Yeah. Man, that sucks. I wasn't even thinking about like the wear from just like the E15 fuel.
Yeah.
But like in the Fiesta world, a lot of people run E30 tunes.
Okay.
Because that's as much as the factory ECU, like, cuz you need more fuel. If you run ethanol,
okay,
you know, it has less BTUs per liter.
Okay.
So you have to put more fuel in the car. So the injectors in the Fiesta are really small, so you can't run that much. But also, the ethanol has been known to just destroy those high-pressure fuel pumps.
Interesting. So it's a problem across the automotive world.
Yeah. So I'm interested to... I think people will make those, you know, parts, you know... I know, I think it's the old, like, Mazda 6, Mazda 3, or Mazda Speed 3s.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the old turbocharged ones, yeah.
Those ones were really bad, but you could get kits to convert the high-pressure fuel pumps to be able to use ethanol.
So you can run the ethanol tune and see that power gain.
Yeah.
That's cool. Is that something you're thinking about doing for your Fiesta?
The thing is, I don't want to mess with an E30 tune, because that is literally, you go up to the E85 pump, you put in, like, 2 gallons... You go up to the other 91 pump, you fill up the rest of your tank.
Yeah, that seems
a giant
pain for every in the time ass. You need to get gas.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm like, no, I'm not I'm not dealing with that. So I think I think in the future, I'm just going to get a race gas tune.
Okay.
Just because there's a couple places in town here that'll do race gas, like over by Vandermeer.
Okay. And then you can adjust the tune on the fly.
Yeah.
When you're going to run on the track, you can switch it up to race fuel.
Right.
That's cool.
That's my plan. It's so much easier.
Yeah.
And plus, the whole injector problem on the Fiestas is a bit of a pain in the ass.
Would you have to swap the injectors back to run normal gas again?
No, you can run the same injectors. The problem is the injectors in the Fiesta are just so tiny. They're not the same direct injection injectors Ford uses on everything else that they have, like the Mustang and the Focus and stuff that people make aftermarket for.
Yeah.
No, the Fiesta's ones are smaller.
Oh, they have to be, of course. And they're just for the Fiesta, huh?
They're just for the Fiesta. Nobody makes aftermarket injectors for those.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, there was a... I don't know if you saw the wreck outside of Aspen yesterday. So a Fiesta and a Honda Accord smashed into each other on a Rappo. Really?
I didn't see that.
And I saw it, and I just thought about your video picking the junkyard for window switches. I'm like, Matt could go scavenge that wreck Fiesta.
Yes, give me your window switches. Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, when I was leaving the shop yesterday, my blend door motor started clicking to the Fiesta.
Oh, no. Is it still working, though?
No.
Oh, man.
it's just stuck on defrost. At least it's on defrost.
That's true. If you're going to have... It's going to be stuck on anything right now.
Right. But when I bought that car, it was doing that, and I had to change it out. That's man. That part's only... Actually, that might be under warranty.
That's a good idea.
I mean, it's only like $12.
I wonder if... did you get it through Advanced?
Yeah, well, through Worldpack.
Okay, you might still be able to get a labor claim.
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had it in the shop, though.
Okay.
I think I just bought it.
Oh, you just bought it. Okay. Because
it was like $12. Luckily, it's not hard to change. Anybody with a Fiesta or any Ford car, for that matter, will know the issues with the freaking blend door motors. It's clicking away. It's ridiculous. All right, well, let's do some automotive news, some things that we've missed the last few weeks.
Sounds good.
Cool. What is on our list here? These are pretty old at this point because, you know, we haven't done a podcast in 3 weeks, but bear with us. So we were kind of talking about this a little earlier, the Formula Drift Pro-Spec rules.
Yes.
So Pro-Spec, I had to look this up, is kind of like the in-between of like the amateur and pro?
So I think, I'm not positive on this, I believe it's above pro-am and below pro, which there used to just be, you know, amateur, pro-am, and if you won, I think it was you had to win or podium a pro-am event to get your Formula D Pro license. But then they added the Pro 2 in between those two, which I believe Pro 2 is now Pro-Spec.
Okay.
I'm not positive on this, but you used to actually see a lot more drivers in the Pro Series of Formula Drift, but adding Pro 2, they thought that kind of made it more competitive because only so many drivers were actually in the Pro Series.
Well, the Pro Series kind of got a little ridiculous.
The builds are $250,000 builds.
Right, and you just... If you're a independent, you know, you can't compete with that.
Yeah, there are a couple independent guys in there, like Michael Essa.
Yep.
And I always wonder, you know, what he does for a living.
Right. where does your money come from, man?
Yeah, because he exclusively drifts in BMWs, or at least every time I've seen him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's I know that the E36s and 46s have kind of become the new cheap go-to drift car, but this guy's been doing it in IMS, and he's been doing it while the S chassis were still cheap. So, I'd be interested to see how he's able to privately fund himself.
Right. Yeah, I'm always, you know, racing is not a cheap hobby.
No.
At the best of times.
Yeah, and even as an amateur, you're going to spend quite a bit of money keeping yourself on the track.
Right. And once you enter a race series that's all about destroying tires...
Yes.
You know, your costs go up exponentially.
It's really expensive. I've got one set of tires right now ready, and I'm going to have one more set, and then I'm going to go to the track, and in one day, I'm going to destroy them both.
Right. What kind of tires are you running on those?
So right now, I just got a set of Hankooks, which I am on those new Roto-Grids that I just got, which I'm excited about. The car's still up in the air. I'm just doing some basic services, belts and stuff. Soon we'll hopefully be doing a clutch.
Yes.
That way, you know, going into this next season when things start to warm up a little bit, It'll be set up just to destroy the tires, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to actually get out. I want to go out with you to IMI and just see what that whole scene is about. Like, you know, I've talked with Jake Caldwell on the show, and people know him from IMI, from the Yankee Zoco crew. And I've always needed to get up there, and I haven't got to IMI yet. I've been here for like 5 years and still have not been to IMI. I have no idea why.
Yeah, I just went that one time, but, you know, I'm addicted.
Yeah.
You know, it's $100 a day to drift, but, you know, that's why it's, I definitely want to have at least two sets of tires.
Get because, your money's worth.
Exactly. You know, I can, you know, with the power I've got now, I don't have that much. I think a couple sets of tires will last me most of the day.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm going to be putting a lot of tires in your car, aren't I?
You're going to be putting a lot of tires on
Where's Brandon? But yeah, so this ProSpec series, in an attempt to try to keep the cost down, is what I kind of what it seems like they're going to be doing anyways here. They're kind of, according to the thing I've seen, it seems like they're rolling this out in stages. So this year, in ProSpec, you have to run an H pattern shifter, so no sequentials.
Okay.
So that will, although I want to say that it'll keep costs down, but at the same time, you can get some pretty expensive H pattern shifters.
Yeah, I mean, you can spend a lot on a manual transmission.
Right. Because, you know, the sequentials, of course, those are race-only things, you know, specialty products, and cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I'm sure those people make, you know, specialty H-pattern shifters that are crazy, you know, dogtooth, straight gear, just, like, jam it into gear type stuff.
Yeah, where you never even have to use the clutch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, that's, I think, something you see in all racing where it's like, we're going to make these set of rules to try to keep costs down. But the problem is you're asking a bunch of engineers to abide by rules when their whole mindset is, let me think of a way around this.
You know?
And they always do. That's why they have to change F1 rules every year.
Right. I mean, you know, what's the old saying? If you ain't cheating, you ain't winning.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to really keep the cost down. In 2022, this is one that really weirds me out, is you are required to run a Link ECU.
Yeah, and I know Link is sponsoring this. So I don't know if, as a ProSpec driver, you're going to get a discount
right on
your Link ECU. Which, if that was the case, then, you know, that sounds like a good way to keep costs down. Because, right, you know, there's not going to be somebody with a standalone AEM running against somebody with a stock ECU or an improperly installed Mega Squirt.
Right. But, like, I wonder if this is, like, a way for them. So, like, in a lot of race series, they'll, like, check your ECU tune, basically.
Yeah.
Like, in Formula 1, FIA, pretty much you have to submit your engine tune to them ahead of time. And they go over it.
Wow.
You know, and you can't deviate from that. It's their way of making sure you're not, like, boost all of it.
Right.
You know? So I wonder if there's, like, something they're going to do with that, with, like, ECUs. Like,
it's kind of
like, almost lock them down or something.
Yeah, and it's kind of a way to police the contenders.
Right.
Hopefully, you know, if that is done, it's not, you know, it's done in a fair way.
Right.
Where everybody's running kind of a similar setup. Because, you know, it's like you're saying, in the Pro Series, it gets ridiculous, you know.
Right.
You've got people running 1,200 horsepower setups.
Yeah.
And some people are only running 500 horsepower setups. So I don't know if they're going to use that as a way to limit power, or try to even things out, or if it's just kind of a test bed for Link.
Yeah,
to get their ECUs in a bunch of different platforms.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see in the future. I also wonder if all these rules are going to make the ProSpec class, like, less, like, desirable, you know?
You mean, like, the limitations because they can't do the truly bonkers builds?
Right.
Like, it's a rear-wheel drive Corolla.
Right. It's just, like, I don't know if this is a weird step in between the Pro-Am and the Pro, you know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, cause then in 2023, if we keep going, stock steering columns required and possibly no rear mount radiators.
But they haven't confirmed the rear mount radiator.
They haven't confirmed that one yet. I guess that's just a stall rumor. But the stock steering column thing, I guess, is a for sure.
Which, you know, I haven't priced running a rear mount radiator, but,
well, I mean, that's all custom at that point. You know, I think kind of the point, it seems like, to be like, you know, they want like a stock chassis car, kind of.
They don't want, they want it to be more accessible in that way.
Right. But then again, at Pro-Am, you could probably run a rear mount radiator, can't you? Or what's the, what's, you know, the, I wonder what the rules are for Pro-Am.
Yeah, we'd have to look into those. Yeah. Because I'm not sure. It's because I've never heard of any regulations against proper cooling. You know, just because it's hard to cool a car that's going 90 miles an hour sideways.
Right.
When there's no air coming in through the front grille.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they did the rear mounts for a long time.
Yeah, and so...
Well, that, and also when you bash into a wall, you don't bash your radiator, but...
Unless you bash into it backwards.
True, which is possible. Oh, man. We are kind of getting long in the show, so let's fly through some more of these talking points. I don't know if you read the thing from Hagerty, end of the Volkswagen Golf for America.
It's the end of an era.
I mean, you know? We still get the GTI. They're still going to make the GTI, but no regular Golfs.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I wonder if that's because a lot of the people who were buying small hatchbacks are now, you know, when they're not buying the sport version, they're now buying crossovers.
Right.
Those have kind of taken over the market of people who don't really care about their cars. They just want something useful.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. So many small crossovers.
Yeah. Just lifts and jukes and cross treks and...
Right.
Yeah.
And all they are is lifted hatchbacks.
Yeah, that's all they are.
With useless all-wheel drive.
Yeah, best case scenario, they corner like a lifted, you know, hatchback.
Right.
Which when I drove the Juke for the first time, you know, when I, at least the one with the manual transmission, mm-hmm. it did feel like kind of like a GTI with ground clearance.
Yeah. Honestly, I still like the Juke Nismo. Well, the Juke Nismo RS, I should say. In front-wheel drive with a stick shift. There's right. a lot of caveats here. But that car, actually, I like the way that drives. But yeah, no regular Golf. It's just like I feel like that's just the sign that America's done with cheap hatchbacks.
Yeah, and they're ready for cheap lifted hatchbacks.
Right. But it's just, man, how long has the Golf been here? Like,
it's been a long time. What did it say? 85 or
sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they said that America got it for the Mark II.
Yeah.
For the first generation.
The Mark One. And it's like, listen, I'm not a Volkswagen guy. You know that. I don't like my Volkswagens. But still, like, the GTI was, like, you know, the class I run in Track Attack. You know,
yeah.
The front-wheel drive A-class.
Yeah.
It's GTIs. You know, it's the GTI yeah. class.
It's the original hot hatch.
Right.
Which I'm glad that we still get the GTI. Right. I do wish that you could get a clutch pedal in the Golf R.
Yes.
Which, you know, you could in the first gen of it, but... you know, you couldn't get one in the second generation R32 when they did that for the mm-hmm. Mark V.
Real quick, did they have to call it an R32? I get the point.
It's so confusing.
But
yeah.
Yeah, like, this was a couple years ago. My buddy was talking about how his friend had a twin turbo R32. I'm right. Like, oh, yeah, that's fucking sweet. Yeah, right. That's cool. And then it showed up and it was a Volkswagen. I was like, oh. Like, I don't want that.
Probably did make a lot of power, twin turbo V6 and a Volkswagen.
Yeah, I know. It was probably fast as hell, but like, it just wasn't what I was expecting. And
you're like, I thought you had a Skyline.
I thought you were cool.
I actually saw an R33 GTR on Hamden on the way here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
going the other way. R33, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, they're starting to pop up. I mean, I'm not that surprised, I guess. Like,
yeah, there's some money here in this area, so.
Like, if you go to a car meet now, when those things happen again.
Yeah. It's sad that those aren't a thing right now.
Yeah, but when you go to those, like this summer, hopefully, there's like 10 GTRs there now.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even cool anymore.
Yeah. I'm actually seeing more R32s than I'm seeing S chassis at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, which is pretty wild because when I was growing up, you know, you always saw S chassis and you were lucky if you ever stumbled across R chassis of any type, whether it's rear drive or all-wheel drive.
You know, yeah, like, even 6-7 years ago, if I saw a GTR, I'd, like, turn around and follow it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I need to know you.
Yeah, and today I was just like, oh, look, an R33. That's all cool. Right, back to my day.
Oh, man. To round out the news, I think, this was one we just found while we were pre-recording here. Subaru is going to launch an off-road sub-brand.
I think that that has the potential to be cool.
Yeah.
When I used to sell Subarus, our dealership offered a lift kit and off-road wheel package for all of the SUVs, even the Outback.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. We actually had a shipping container full of stock Crosstrek wheels from everyone who'd bought a lifted Crosstrek. And they'd taken off those stock wheels.
And you were listing those, right? You were saying?
I did. I listed those on Craigslist. I actually sold every single one while I was there.
Oh, wow.
And I developed a relationship between a professional wheel buyer in the parts department, and now they don't have them pile up anymore.
Oh, okay. Because I remember when I got my Outback,
yeah,
I was thinking about lifting it, and I wanted wheels for it because it's got steelies on it right now.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing your ads before I ever knew you.
Wow.
On Craigslist, being because they were takeoffs. And yeah. I was like, oh, man.
$400 for a set of new Yokohama Geolanders? Yeah.
And I almost did it, but I think there was like maybe a clearance issue or something. No, it should fit on the Outback. I don't know. I didn't buy them for whatever reason, but...
I remember I actually sold a few to people with your Outback generation, and the overall diameter is a little... It's more than a little off.
Okay.
You know, I think you'd have a 5 mile an hour discrepancy on your speedometer.
Meh, whatever. That's fine. Because, originally I was thinking about lifting that Outback and stuff, but then it became the girlfriend's car. And I was like, she doesn't need a lifted car. It already gets pretty poor gas mileage. I don't need to be making it worse.
Let's give it some more wind noise on the highway.
Yeah. Let's make it like, you know, give it less caster so it just wants to swerve everywhere. Like, we're not going to do that. But, because I do think not only your dealer, but, you know, where Subarus are sold.
In, right.
Washington, Colorado.
Yeah.
Northern Michigan, you know, I feel like the people that buy those, like, they like the lifted stuff, you know?
Which Subaru's whole brand is 8.7 inches of ground clearance.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, the Crosstrek lift is a 1.3 inch lift, so you get to the full 10 inches, which is more than a factory Wrangler.
It's always good when you get to the full 10 inches. Wait, what? I can go back to that because I was thinking about my stupid joke, but that's more than a Wrangler?
Yeah, the Wrangler, I think, is 9.8 from the factory. That's just the stock one. I'm sure that there's some lift kits you can get from the factory.
Yeah, I'm sure that's like the base model steel-wheeled Wrangler.
But yeah.
Still, because those things do, like, if you get like the base model Wrangler, they sit pretty low. But yeah, no, I think out here in Colorado anyways, I think this is going to be a huge...
Yeah. And you know, while I was on the sales staff there, the sales manager sent out an email of a concept Subaru built of a Crosstrek STI with a factory lift, 315 horsepower tune and a 6-speed manual, which I think that would be amazing to see.
Right.
You know, that's a reason not to buy one of those new Broncos.
I don't know about that, but that's a completely different car.
I think if you're comparing the two-door one.
The Bronco Sport?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bronco Sport is just a fucking Explorer. Like, that's good. I don't even know why they're making that. This full-size Bronco, though, that's cool. And also, why didn't they call the Bronco Sport the Bronco 2?
That would have been cool.
Like back in the day?
Yeah.
Although I don't think many people have fond memories of Bronco 2s. They were kind of garbage. But
there's a diehard fan base.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. But yeah, apparently they're out in Michigan testing these Foresters and Outbacks with these sub-brand stuff. So I don't know if it's going to be like a sub-brand. That's what they're saying in this article here. Or if it's just going to be like a trim package.
Yeah, it sounds like it might be a trim level.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Subaru's only really got 4 SUVs that they sell. They've got the Crosstrek, the Outback, the Ascent, and the Forester.
Oh, hey, in this article, both vehicles have 8.7 inches of ground clearance.
Yeah.
Man, you had that memorized, didn't you, from selling?
They pounded that into our heads.
I think this will do good. And the reason I like this idea, too, is like as much as the dealer or dealer installed lift kit and wheels is nice.
Yeah.
Oh, God. What is that?
Sorry, folks.
Getting a call. Sounds like a wake-up alarm. Like
it is. It's really pleasant.
Like, one of those slow, like, wakes you up. Just like, oh, yeah, that was nice.
It's really nice to wake up to that sound every day. My old one was a little abrupt.
Yeah.
I'm in a better mood all day.
My alarm sound is actually from the video game Stardew Valley. which is, I don't know if you ever played like Harvest Moon back in the day or if you're a big video game person. It's like a farm sim.
Okay.
But this is one of the songs that plays when your character wakes up in the morning. And it's just like all gentle and then gets into it. I'm like, yeah, it's perfect.
It's a good way to start your day. There's no need.
Exactly.
You're going to have enough abrupt, unexpected things happen to you during the day.
Right.
You don't need to start out with a phone alarm.
Yeah, whoever thought the idea of just a loud buzzer waking you up was a good idea, it needs to be shot in the head.
Yeah, those people are clearly unhappy and trying to spread it to the rest of us.
Oh, right. Back to the Subarus. Again, we keep getting off track. The reason I like this idea is because if it's factory built, then they'll probably do something different with the differentials.
Yeah.
For the bigger tires.
Yeah.
It'll have a different tune on it. It'll be like meant to be lifted and have bigger tires on it.
I hope that the CVT is up to the task because sadly that's going to be a consistent factor if you don't get a manual option, which
you're not going to.
Which currently there's no manual on the Outback, Ascent, or Forester. There is one for the Crosstrek though.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They just started making the manuals in the Crosstrek, didn't they?
I know that there was one for the 2020s. There were manuals, which I always loved when a customer showed up and wanted to test drive a manual. I'm like, I'm going to get you into this car.
You are buying one of these. We need to get those numbers up.
Right. We have to have more manuals out in the world.
Right.
And when I worked in the service department there, I would thank customers for buying manuals every time they came in.
Nice.
Like, you're keeping this alive. We need people like you in the
world. At least out here in Colorado, it seems like there's a lot more manuals on the road.
It's true, especially in the vehicles people like to off-road in.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is surprising, because honestly, for me, if I'm building an off-roader, I'm getting an automatic.
You can torture a clutch pretty badly trying to get uphill.
Right.
But if you're careful, it's nice to have that. You know, like, I'm just going to keep it in first gear, and, you know, I don't care if I'm at red line, I'm climbing this hill.
Right. Yeah, the torque converter, I mean, you can overheat your trans and your trans fluid and stuff like that, but... Yeah, burning out a clutch it seems a lot easier.
Yeah.
Unless you got, like, we were talking about those old Ford IDI diesels, where you just, like, let out the clutch and it'll just climb a mountain. It doesn't care.
You just let off the clutch and you never have to worry about engaging the throttle.
Well, I think that is going to do it for us today, everybody. We actually didn't get through everything. We only had, like, 5 things to discuss, but our tangents took too long.
Well, that's why we have good podcast chemistry.
Right, exactly. So... That is fine by me. We can get to those things in the future episode, which will be in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Hold us accountable. Yes.
Message us. Make us do it.
Right? But we have the studio. Hopefully it'll sound a little less echoey next time. And yeah, we can just keep rolling with these.
Let's keep rolling. I'll try not to bump my mic stand so many times next week. Or 2 weeks.
And then I'll play you silence your phone. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Peace out.